This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
Not all monsters are under the bed. Some are sleeping next to you. Welcome to Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, featuring retired FBI special agent and chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, Robin Dreek.
Lyle and Eric Menendez are not going to be home for the holidays. There's not going to be the HGTV special where Eric and Lyle put shiplap up with Joanna Gaines, unfortunately. They're going to be in prison. The judge saying, we're going to wait till January 30th and 31st to decide on your fates. And, well, for good reason. He says there's a new AG coming in, wants to get their opinion on all of the evidence that has resurfaced and to review it all. And then decide, you know, where this goes next. There's still some hoops to jump through, including a parole board. Join me to discuss Robin Dreek, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, and author of the book that's on the wall behind him and that I have in my hand right here. Good. Would this fit into a stocking? I have a wide enough stocking, I think that would work. But it is a good Christmas gift. Get it wherever books are sold. So what's your thoughts? Are you surprised that they're not out by Thanksgiving? Do you think that this is all going to kind of fall apart here? What's your take?
I have two. When I first heard it, I was like, I was disappointed, you know, because like you feel for the, I feel for these two.
Yeah.
I mean, so I really wanted them out sooner rather than later, but then my pragmatic brain kicks in and I understand, you know, I give props to the judge for honoring the process.
Sure.
I mean, as you know, we have to have faith in our institutions and our law enforcement officers and our court processes. And we just need to have faith and trust in our things that we do to keep things functioning well and equitably. And so I see the reason behind it. I'm disappointed for the boys, but you know, what's another month or two waiting?
Yeah.
So disappointment is me, Robin, personally. Pragmatically, I get it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a bureaucratic type move. You got to like the next person's in, even though the other person already said okay. It's a lot to go through. There's the new evidence, of course, that they're going to take a look at. That letter from Eric Menendez to a cousin written months before the murders, talking about the fear of their father. You have the Menudo individual, Rory Rosolio, who's come out. And there's also been other members of Menudo who have hinted that, they'd be willing to talk as well. So it's a pretty, I think, safe assumption that Jose Menendez was not a great father, at the very least, very likely abusive and very likely sexually abusive. And when you have that, you know, this is what you get. I know a lot of people are pointing back to, well, Eric and Lyle, they were on a criminal spree leading up to these sort of things happening. A lot of burglaries that were taking place from kids who had pretty much everything. But then you got to take a look back at that too and go, well, why are they acting out this way? Maybe they're being abused a lot at home and then they're acting out. And that may have been what led to some of that behavior. Again, it's all, you know, from many, many years ago, 30-some years ago, it's hard to put all that into context and say this is the motive or that was not the motive.
Yeah, and when they didn't allow a lot of this evidence back then to come to the jury, I mean, how could you have anything but the outcome that they had? You know, again, when you take in the context of the time period, the challenge of convincing someone back then that a male father could sexually abuse his boys was just unheard of in that time period, at least in the public forum, like it was. And then when you put on top of it, how they accentuated their behavior after it, you know, that it just looked on a spending spree and they're just spoiled brat kids. I mean, that's literally how they're painted. You know, I didn't even pay too much attention to this case back then, but I knew of it. And that I'm just recalling that memory I just have isn't from what I read now. It's actually my memory from back then, because that's exactly how the press had covered it back then. So it's a lot to overcome.
Yeah. I mean, it was one of those cases where at the time they looked at it as, you know, there were a group of people that other people would like to poke at and go, oh, they're entitled. And if you have money, you got it the wrong way or bad. There's just a lot of that attitude that's out there. And I think that people felt good in a way of villainizing these two and never hearing their story accurately. But we were in a time and place too, where, yeah, that wasn't talked about. And I mean, that in itself is fascinating to me when we look back, because it's not ancient history. I mean, this is 30-ish years ago. To the fact that we've gone from that far of like people weren't even accepting that that's a possibility or a thing to like, yeah, it's pretty widespread. This sort of stuff has happened and has always happened. Why do you think that is? As a behavioralist, why have we had such a shift in society to be more understanding and accepting of these sort of things and the consequences than we did just a short time ago?
We do this all the time. As a species, this is what we do.
Mm-hmm.
The pendulum is always swinging. It never stops.
Yeah.
We go from one awareness to the other. You know, we think we're at center right now, but in 10, 20, 30 years, people are going to look back now and say, oh, wow, it was way over here. Because what happens is when things get so extreme, people have outrage, they fight back, and they recenter, and they think they're bringing that pendulum back to center, but then because people are so cautious, they'll swing back the other way. Mm-hmm. So think about this time period that we're talking about now, and this was a time period where being openly gay was lambasted by mainstream media.
Yeah.
I mean, people were losing their jobs if they came out as gay. This is the time period right before Don't Ask, Don't Tell in the military by Clinton, a Democrat.
Yeah.
And so, and even just think about this. So that's even minor compared to the fact that not too long before that, let's see, 39 to 40, mm-hmm. this was the 1980s. So 40 years prior to this, you had entire religions called Judaism being wiped out off the face of the planet because of that pendulum swing.
Yeah.
You know, and so, and what happened there, it swung back the other way. So you had an entire nations that were anti-Jewish wiping people out, then it swung back again. It swings back again. So what we do as a species, we're constantly doing this.
Yeah.
And it's very hard for us to realize that you cannot really assess how effective or good we're being at our own behavior as a nation state, as counties, communities, and towards our fellow human beings in a 10 or 20 or 30 or 40 year period. We you've really got to look at us at hundreds and thousands of years blocks, because it's more, a little more effective. So it's not just being a behaviorist. It's understanding anthropology and our evolution. Yeah. It's then taking looks at us as a species in generally at least 100 year blocks. Matter of fact, historians will even tell you, you cannot historically accurately look back at an event unless you've got 100 year separation at least.
Mm-hmm.
So it's even this time period, just looking back to what happened then, give it another 40 years, and I think it will be even more accurate assessing what happened.
Enlightenment in terms of social acceptance and norms doesn't happen in 10, 20 years. That's a much longer thing. And that's where you have the swing back and forth, and eventually it settles itself out. But by the time it settles itself out, everybody who's involved in those cases are dead, because that's how long it takes.
You know, because again, and it's also different places in the world, you know, because every culture, I mean, just look at around our world right now. The United States is extremely open and accepting of different lifestyles, genders, orientations, you know, LGBTQ, you know, all that, compared to some nations in our world right now.
Yeah.
Not even close. Well, women's rights in our country is extremely much better than a lot of other countries as well. So it's also culturally dependent.
And another interesting, I think, aspect of this, if you look back on it into that time period, is society as a whole really had a weird way of looking at sexual abuse of same sex onto another, or abuse of children, and conflating that in some way, shape, or form of, well, they're just gay. Like, there's abuse, and they're not the same thing. It's right. not the same thing whatsoever. But I, at that point in time, I don't know what society would have said was worse. You know, the way that people had viewed things at that moment in time.
It is fascinating, you know, when you look at generationally, how the generationally perceives himself as well. So I'm an Xer, so I was raised by boomers, and boomers are generally, and then traditionalists before them, it was all about maintaining a facade, an outside facade that mm-hmm. we, you know, it's a Wally Cleaver, you know, yeah. household, you know, like it looked a certain way, everyone's wearing the ties. And I mean, there's always a perception of what you need to project to the rest of the world mm-hmm. of what the media at the time can. I think it's really easier to kind of look at what the media said was acceptable, because that's what everyone does. Is everyone's always looking to the media, because we are, as a species, we suffer what I call the cult of comparison and the disease of more.
Yeah.
And so the comparison thing is really key and critical, because whatever the media puts out is what the norm should be, is what people conform to. And so the media at the time, if they're going to say negative things, or the TV shows are portraying what the regular people should aspire to look like, anything that deviated from what they were saying was normal was disregarded, not regarded at all. And so you look at the TV shows at the time that were put out. You had Happy Days, you had Laverne and Shirley, you had Gilligan's Island. I mean, you had some goofy stuff. You had then Dallas, mm-hmm. You had 90210. I mean, so you look at historically some of these things, what kind of diversity was in these shows? Because remember, I keep going back to Ellen on this one. Ellen DeGeneres had her show back then, hugely popular sitcom she had. All of a sudden, she decides to come out as openly gay.
Mm-hmm.
Canceled.
Yeah, remember that. Yeah.
Can you imagine that now?
No. No. I mean, it's amazing how much that can change in such a short period of time.
Yeah.
And how people's attitudes can be more enlightened, and then in other ways, and we look at other aspects of society and feel like we've regressed quite a bit.
Yeah. But that's why. So I study and love anthropology and history and evolution and all these things, because it gives me beautiful context to know that, hey, we're better today than we were before. We're not perfect today, and we'll be better tomorrow. And so, and then just asking yourself, instead of getting emotionally wrapped up on it could be better, of course it could be better, I always ask myself, what specifically can I do to impact that?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we do every day, is we solve problems. And we solve problems by asking pragmatically, what can I do to rectify this?
Mm-hmm.
This is a right, this is a wrong. What are we going to do about it? And again, I don't want to paint the picture that I think we got it all right in our country. Absolutely not. Yeah. But if you're looking for data, again, you'll find the data you're looking for. Always know this. There's not a place on this planet that's got it all right. There's not a place on the planet that's got it all wrong.
Yeah.
There's aspects of greatness and there's aspects of bad. You'll find what you need to find. And then you can take all that goodness and what are you going to do to incorporate into what we're doing now to kind of move that dial forward for us.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
Let's be honest. Nothing kills the thrill of a good murder mystery like a commercial for laundry detergent. It's like someone slapping a closed sign on your favorite dive bar. But you're not here for that, are you? You're here for the good stuff. So ditch the ads and upgrade to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts. With True Crime Today Premium Plus, you get your crime straight. No chaser. Commercial free with extended interviews and early access. It's like getting the bartender's special when the bar's already closed. Search for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe and drink it all in.